At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Tough as Nails is back. Season 4, episode 6 is here. And we're here to shrink wrap up another episode of Tough as Nails here as we talk about what went on over at Crate Modular. Okay. And so let's talk it all through. Of course, back with us, Jessica Lees. Jess, how are you?
Doing great, Rob. Hold on a sec. I'm just going to get a glass of water here.
Don't drink it. No.
Oh, God.
No.
Tangy.
Drink it.
Wow.
Drink it.
Okay. Wow. Jess with props here for Tough as Nails.
I feel bad, like kind of horning in on Mike Bloom's territory. But
Please. It takes a lot of grind to do that. And I don't know how many blades you went through, Jess, being able to make that drink, but I appreciate it.
Yes.
Effort.
Okay, and if you are listening to the podcast, let me just paint the picture. Mike Bloom is completely encased in shrink wrap. I don't even know how he did it to himself.
Impressive. I'm doing the Kevin Schlehuber, right, method of putting yourself in shrink wrap to lose weight.
There's not even any holes in that. That's really impressive.
It's impressive. Mike. I don't know. Then I hope you can breathe in that thing, Mike.
Breathing's overrated. Listen, I'm as long as it takes for me to become the housing that people need so that I can eventually become a school that children can attend to. Crate Modular, I never heard of this place, but good God, they are doing such fantastic work. If this episode was just one big advertisement for this business, I'm all happy for it because they are doing some really cool stuff, it seems.
Yeah, these shipping containers, you know, I had seen like you can get like a shipping container swimming pool, but apparently like, yeah, these are repurposing the shipping container is a big industry.
Well, who among us didn't grow up reading The Boxcar Children and think it would be super cool to live inside a shipping container?
I bet you could make a pretty good shipping container podcast studio. Take it on the road.
I think you'd really have to like cover it in all the blankets in the world to make sure that the sound doesn't echo too much, but it definitely is an alternative. Rob, are you going to call up Crate Modular here coming to you live from my shipping container?
I mean, I'm set right now, but there definitely have been points in my life when I felt like Crate Modular would have been a good way to go.
Get
the crane going. Yeah.
I mean, I'll see you, your boxcar children, but I'll sort of counter you with like The Wire season 2. And Dexter season 3 in terms of infamous moments that occur in shipping containers that make me kind of stay away from them in general.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe that's how some of our Tough as Nails contestants are going to feel about their experiences with the different shipping containers. And really for George, ultimately, almost completely hoisted by his own petard. He had all of the power and ultimately ends up in the overtime and seeing his good buddy Beth be the person to be eliminated. We'll talk through everything. But just where did George go wrong?
I think there's kind of a through line this episode. I noticed a couple of different contestants. I don't know if it's necessarily George going wrong, but there were a couple of contestants that you hear them say in confessional, I want to do it this way. And then they don't say anything or they get shot down and they turn out to be right. And I think in this case, it was a case of Beth not wanting to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
And this might have been the decider in that particular situation.
Yeah. Yeah, for Beth, really sad to see her out of the individual competition because she looked like one of the people that was a real candidate to win a Tough as Nails season four.
It just goes to show something we talked about last week, right? That like any given Wednesday, I suppose, that you can run into any sort of competition that can do you. And we talked about how Sergio and Jake, I would say two front runners, got into overtime last week just because of the challenge. This time, George and Beth, we've certainly have talked about George at least being like the front runner to win. And he was, you know, one bad soldering job away from being eliminated as well. So this season does feel like the field's more wide open. I'm excited to talk about the individual challenge in particular, because this might be the most explicitly strategic.
Yeah, well, let's start there if we have the most to talk about there, because, you know, that I was really surprised that George came out and he, you know, had the ability to make the teams. And I almost feel like that on Tough as Nails, people are like, you know, this is just no reason. This is just what I'm doing. He came out and said, hey, I am trying to eliminate some big threats here. And I thought that was very interesting for Tough as Nails, especially with what he was trying to do. So what was his main objective? He wanted to get either Jake or Alima eliminated.
Well, look at Look how well Alima is doing in all of the individual challenges. She's top three almost every week. And Jake, everybody has spoken about how he kind of has a good solution for everything. Mm-hmm. And they also have very strong personalities. I think strategically it was a smart bet, although I'm surprised that he lampshaded it as such. Mm-hmm. It really is not a tough as nails thing to say you're being strategic. Like the one time we've seen people do that, it really didn't reflect well on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are we to assume that he's hoisted by his own petard because he tried to be strategic and, you know, that's karma coming back to him?
I wonder.
It's tough because the rationale that he gave, I thought was great. Like, if that is your intention, if you come in with a goal, and it's not like he, you know, made the other teams expressly for the purpose of eliminating those other two. Like, he picked Beth because that's probably the person he could communicate with the most on Dirty Hands between her and Ellery. Like, the way he made the other teams make sense. Hell, Laura and Laren, even though they were not the intended target, were nearly put in the bottom two instead of the two of them. So, yeah, I think the thing to take away was the fact that he was so open about it. I guess leave it to a cast like Tough as Nails to not necessarily not be strategic, but not have the inclination to, like, fib about it, right? To be like, oh, yeah, you know, I just thought that they should get to know each other a little bit better because they've been butting heads a little bit. Like, there is no hoity-toity BS reasoning happening. George is incredibly upfront, tried to call his shot, which, again, I really appreciate, but I appreciate even more due to the fact that it gets completely blown up in his face. I think we've seen this advantage, you know, a few times on Tough as Nails. This is definitely the first time that it has blown up to this magnitude.
Now, do you feel like, is there any sort of blowback from the other contestants to come out and be like this, like outright strategic in terms of like trying to target other people that are in the competition? Because I feel like that is very un-Tough as Nails.
I think if it had worked, I think there would be more blowback.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I think it fueled Jake and Alima and it made them do better. Mm-hmm. I think they were out to prove something. And in that case, it's almost like they got to thank him for putting them in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also wonder, you know, this advantage comes around maybe once like every season. I don't know if there'll be opportunities for Jake and Alima to kind of quote unquote exact revenge on George if they have the opportunity to do so. They usually only do these pair of challenges at even numbers. And we really only have, assuming there's a final four finale, we only have one more individual challenge with even numbers. So unless there's something where it's, oh, you can add 15 pounds of weight onto one other person. That's when they can use it on him. Otherwise, I think it's more of a nana nana boo boo. Look what we were able to show you.
Well, the interesting thing is that they what George was like trying to, I feel like, was trying to like almost like protect the members of the Dirty Hands and try to say, OK, well, I want to make sure that a Savage Crew person ends up being eliminated. So I feel like that for a lot of the other people in the competition, I think they liked what George did. And I wonder if it wasn't like a group decision that was made with the entirety of the Dirty Hands.
It's also something notable that Jess and I talked about last week, right? That up to this point, there's only been one Savage Crew person eliminated. After this week, there's only two Dirty Hands people left. So yeah, it might have just been out of survival of, these are my teammates, these are the people that I like, so let me try to, you know, ensure their survivability. And to your point, I think at least half the cast would support that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess in terms of the actual competition that happened of shrink wrapping a house, you know, I have no experience with shrink wrap. I don't know how it works. Like, I would think that putting all that tape around would really mess with the shrink wrap. No.
Yeah, I think it would. I think that was part of the problem. And mm-hmm. You hear Beth articulate this, that she thinks you got to use fewer pieces of tape and like wrap the shrink wrap onto itself. Because that's a thing that happens. This is a thing. I had an apartment many years ago that didn't have heat. And so I got the stuff that you put on the windows.
Okay.
And
you had an apartment that didn't have heat?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It was less than $900 a month for a 2-bedroom. So I stayed there longer than I should have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I had to put the shrink wrap up on the windows to insulate it. And that stuff sticks to itself. You don't need a ton of tape. You just need tape to hold it in place. Don't put tape over the whole thing.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. It wasn't a shipping container, was it?
No, it wasn't. I think shipping container might have been warmer.
Well, also, it wouldn't have windows unless you took your grinder to it and cut out said windows.
I think we've seen that you can make windows in a shipping container.
Mm-hmm. So has Alima unlocked the key to working with Jake of that, you know, that Jake is going to yell and you just either you yell back at him or you can just ignore his yelling?
Yeah, I think Laura also vocalized this in the team challenge as well, right? Of like, Jake is this very excitable puppy energy to him where he's hooting and hollering. And while it can be distracting, it's almost like, you know, an athlete where they're pumping themselves up and you kind of want to take that energy and bat it back at them, get that tennis match going rather than trying to just handle everything that Jake is. And so while Alima definitely had some war of words with Jake and they certainly did not see eye to eye at certain parts of the challenge, I think both she and Laura vocalized really nicely, like how to deal with that unique type of energy oftentimes is just reflecting it back onto him and being able to distribute that energy in that way rather than just kind of trying to internalize it and getting thrown off yourself.
You know, one of the things that as I was watching Tough as Nails that I don't know why this week really jumped out to me, you know, it's like everybody's racing and you're trying to go as fast as you can, but you're also doing like very dangerous stuff.
Ellery almost breaks his leg falling off a ladder.
Yeah. Mr. Freeze had a great confessional where he says, I thought Ellery Dunn died on me.
Yeah.
So falling off a ladder when you're a fireman, is that a 5-hole?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
But Ellery says it happens more often than you think. So mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of the job that we just don't realize.
He might have just been saving face.
Yeah. We don't see a lot of fireman bloopers on YouTube. I try not to go down that rabbit hole.
That's the one rabbit hole you won't go down, huh, Mike?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. I'm not drawing a line. Fireman falling off a ladder.
It's fireman bloopers. Either. Yeah.
It probably gets you on a list somewhere.
Yeah, but no, we saw Ellery that he ended up like wiping out on the ladder. We got the slow motion replay on that. And then Beth also like cut her finger pretty badly also doing this task.
Yeah, it reminded me very much of Top Chef where like when people cut their hands, they have to stop everything and like get bandaged up by medics and then also like clean off all the food that now has blood in it and is unable to be served. That kind of happened with Beth, where it didn't make its impact on the shrink wrap. I did fear that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how pristine the shrink wrap had to be as to like whether they would pass the test due to Beth bleeding all over it.
Yeah, we can't ship this one to San Diego. It looks like Dexter was here.
Surprise.
Dexter was an expert with the shrink wrap too, right?
He had a lot of drop cloths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or did he shrink wrap people?
I feel like when he had them in his little lair, like on the table,
yeah.
I do believe when he was using his own grinder, they were shrink wrapped.
Yeah, I feel like, is that shrink wrap or was that like saran wrap that Dexter used to work with?
Mm. Is Dexter's dark passenger in the damn van?
You know, we haven't had a serial killer on Tough as Nails yet.
That we know of.
Yeah, the next season we have a lumberjack on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Just a bearded man. I'm not doing any personal stories. Don't look at my past.
The lumberjack challenge is an integral part of Tough as Nails, for sure.
Fair point.
So we'll see if that ultimately ends up being something that works out. So we had our teams that we saw that George put together. George and Beth were working together. Mr. and Ellery work together. Mr. Freeze, we found out that really his superpower is working with heat.
It's truly a fire and ice situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a song of ice and fire.
Yeah.
That almost had Ellery a la Bran Stark.
I was going to say, pulling off of buildings.
You don't think he was thrown off, Mike, do you?
The things I do for safety.
Yeah, but I have to say that Jess, that I don't remember if this was on the podcast or if I was watching last week's podcast. So you're talking about the TikTok videos that you like to go down.
Yes, the power washing and carpet cleaning.
Yes, and that I feel like that shrink wrap TikTok probably is also pretty lit.
I'm going to have to look that one up because that does sound very satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you got someone who can do it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Just shrink wrap everything down. That would be exciting.
It might be like that might be the next stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's going to be my moment of Zen later on today. I'm watching people shrink wrap stuff because then when you get it like really good, it's like, wow, this is perfect.
Well, that's the thing, though. Phil said, okay, for your hard work, these are going to be shipped off to San Diego. With no offense to the contestants, given the job they did overall, I think Crate Modular might have been like, all right, let's just like cut through the shrink wrap and do this over again to actually like, again, the George and Beth one was just covered with reams upon reams of tape. Would you really want to send that off to San Diego to represent your company?
Well, I think they take the tape off. I think that's fine. I think really the house itself. Can you
take the tape off, or is this one of those situations of like then it pulls the shrink wrap with it, and then basically the job is undone?
They're fine to go out. They got the thumbs up, right?
I mean, it's protected.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you buy something on eBay, and sometimes it comes in like just a priority box that's sealed shut, and other times it comes with like five layers of packing tape around it. Mm-hmm. In either case, you are protected. Mm-hmm. It's just like you might have to, it might take you a little bit more work to get at what's inside the package.
I felt like that we did not see very much about Laren and Laura. I feel like that other than like at the very end, I think that they had like too much material like at the bottom of their thing. I feel like that they were the most invisible team out of the four teams that were doing this.
Yeah, they seemed at least like fairly competent. They had this fun hack with the broom that they were given, right, to use that to push up the overhang. But it feels like something we get sometimes in these tough as nails challenges where somebody's like, all right, I'm just going to go slow and steady. And then we tune our watches ahead 5 minutes. It's like, oh, they're actually in the bottom three because they took too long. It should be noted, Laren has been in the bottom three in 3 out of 5 individual challenges. He's won one as well, but that's interesting for someone that we know is kind of like cool, calm, and collected. He has an interesting track record that you don't necessarily think about when it comes to how he actually does in these individual challenges.
Mm-hmm. We had our team that was the improbable victors in this challenge as well, and that was Alima and Jake here. Should we give the credit to Alima here for being the Jake whisperer?
I think
they're not whispering. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Jake Yeller.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I mean, some people, it's just how they talk.
Mm-hmm. But she was the one that was able to keep Jake cool, calm, and collected. Kept him focused.
Yeah, I mean, she handled that situation really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she spends, presumably she spends a lot of time with the guy. And she knows what his working style is. And I think there's a lot to be said for you understand what someone is trying to say when they're communicating, regardless of how it's coming out of their mouth.
That another thing as well is not to necessarily equate Jake to this, but I mean, Alima is a mother of two young children. I think we all have experience with like when somebody has a really high amount of energy and they're trying to communicate something, how frazzling that can be. And I think Alima does have that amount of patience to be able to like look him in the eye, try to gauge what's going on with him, and then move on thusly. Again, I'm not comparing Jake to a toddler, but I do think Alima certainly has experience with like de-escalating situations that really came in handy here.
I can see that you're having a lot of trouble. That must be very frustrating, Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can work together to come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are good notes. I'm going to write these all down. So ultimately, it's Jake and Alima. They end up being the victors this week. Really some egg on George's face after he tried to eliminate them. They end up being number one and they get to watch George and Beth go into the overtime. And it was the return of a tough as nails staple, the plumbing overtime.
Yes.
I believe before, didn't they have to like actually bend the pipes to create the full line? This time they were using all the little connectors and the soldering.
Yeah, they had to. There was like an obstacle course they had to go through with the pipe in the Michelle Memorial Challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she won that one, didn't she?
Well, because there was one in season one where they had to connect. I believe they had to connect electrical wiring.
Yeah,
that's
you know
right.
What? Yes.
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but the different variations of a tough as nails favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fun challenge to watch. Mm-hmm. And something where it's like, it's unfamiliar enough that it's interesting to watch, but it's also you can see yourself there and you're like, well, this is how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel like a badass, like I would be really good at that soldering gun. By the way, Phil pronouncing the word solder is like John Montgomery pronouncing the word buoy.
Yes. How is Phil doing it?
He said solder. Mm-hmm. Or solder.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the American pronunciation is we do not pronounce the L.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
we don't pronounce the L because our water is so damn dirty. Our tongues have gone numb.
It's true.
Yeah. This was a fun one to have, like the whole peanut gallery there for like when Beth had to make a cut on the pipe, the reaction from Ellery and like, no, don't do it. She's like, I got to.
Yeah, but they also were like kind of quiet at the same time. Like, I love whenever Phil does golf commentary. I'm like, all right, next up, like a little ASMR Kogan mm-hmm. going on with mm-hmm. obviously they're in a much more intense setting. And so Phil doesn't want to bring that Jake-esque energy. So everyone's just calmly sitting on, you know, the tailgate of the truck, just watching it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say Tough as Nails with large earphones is much better than just watching Tough as Nails with the speakers on your TV.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
because
you get to hear that, Phil's delicate announcing of some of the tense moments.
Yeah, you get the full ASMR and you get like the full immersive experience of whatever intense thing they're working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes Phil in his commentary also like gives you like the editorial of like, that's a move. I don't know about that one. That's not.
Yeah. But then he says the quiet part loud in some things like the team challenges of, oh, George is working really well. Kind of makes you question why he wasn't put on that part in the first place. I do wonder if that was ADR'd or mm-hmm. if Phil actually said that in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ouch, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was neck and neck. Ellery said during the commentary, he's like, hey, I'm thirsty. Get me that water. So
and then he looks at it like, nope, I'm good. Yeah. I'm actually fine. I could go a couple more hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to let that run a while.
And while it looked like in a couple points, George was having problems with his torch, comes real close. Ultimately, George is able to get the water out, and Beth is eliminated from the competition. So for George, he avoids the ultimate disaster of putting himself out of the competition.
Yeah, I guess put him into Final Four Fire Make because he's an expert at Flint. He was able to get the torch restarted despite the fact
with
that he
the
got
striker.
Some, yeah, it seemed like he got some of like the gunk that they use to put out the end of the pipes into mm-hmm. the blowtorch. And as a result, like he was having trouble starting it, but he was able to keep his flame lit in more ways than one. And yeah, this really is the season, in my opinion, of like neck and neck across all competitions. This happened in the team challenge as well this episode, right? Like how it came down to basically seconds between them. And here, yeah, you know, if George had been 10 seconds slower restarting that blowtorch, he would have been eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very close. Looked like that he might have been just short in terms of these connections, but he ends up getting it. So he moves on. And for Beth, she's eliminated from the individual part of the competition. Sad for Beth.
Yeah, well, I think I was with George. I kind of wanted them in the final three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoy Beth. Like, she has a really unique story, right? We have the nautical people on, but considering she does, like, you know, come from a bit of a military background, you know, she's a family person as well. And seeing her connect with someone like Allie over the fact that they're both part of the LGBTQ plus community and sort of like have this sisterly relationship, I thought she ended up actually being a lot of fun. So yet again, I'm happy for this tough as nails structure where she is still going to stick around. What is interesting is, so we've had five people eliminated. Four out of the five have been dirty hands, and four out of the five have also been women. So I think it's safe to say if you had to put your money on something, it would probably be like a Savage Crew man winning this, even though you do still have someone like Alima who definitely is in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen, and again, this is just me reading the edit. We really have not seen enough of Laura to feel like she's got a shot at winning.
Mm-hmm. But look, maybe tough as nails, Edgic.
Mm-hmm.
She's the Laura Gator. She's just going to be underneath the surface, then she'll pop up. At the end.
Yeah. Let's talk about the team challenge, which we haven't really gotten into yet. And so for Savage Crew today, they really were putting a lot of pressure on themselves. Like, it was like, hey, we got to get... Jake was really hot in the van coming in. Like, we got to get this. If we don't, we're going to lose.
He's the human heat gun. He can shrink wrap just by looking at something. Yeah, he's... Jess talks about this all the time, right? The kind of like, I don't know, fluffy stakes that get put into these team challenges of like, oh my God, they're one ahead of us. Like, yeah, they're one challenge ahead of you and you have what, four challenges left. Yeah,
because okay. There is an odd number of challenges and one person by nature has to be mm-hmm. one challenge ahead.
Well, I didn't even understand because it was 3-2, but you Savage Crew started, we got to win three in a row now. Like, why?
I guess technically true, but Dirty Hands would also have to win at least two in a row. Like, again, this is not a huge lead that's being taken. It still is a bit of a shootout mm-hmm. going on. So, I mean, also, though, what's interesting about the challenge is we talked about this last week, right? That one of the reasons why Dirty Hands was able to win is because they had someone like Beth who had a profuse amount of experience there. And Savage Crew now gets their turn here with Mister, despite the fact that they do run into some last minute difficulties. But I think one of the large reasons they win is the fact that he had so much experience with the grinder and how to work things that it pretty much seemed like a breeze for Savage Crew overall.
Mm-hmm. So we had our two big shipping crates. One of them had already been marked. Then the other one, you needed to do the measurements and then ultimately do the grinder. The wrinkle also was that there were only 100 blades that were given to the teams. Just that, do we have things like that before on Tough as Nails where we have like sort of like a limited amount of resources that the teams are using up?
Well, I had the question of what happens if you run out? Is the challenge just over? Is this one of those situations like on Survivor when you run out of Flint
mm-hmm.
and they give you matches. You run out of matches?
Yeah. Well, I think that we got the answer to that because it looked like that Dirty Hands ultimately ran out of blades and they had to keep going back and, using the old ones, right?
Yeah, no, that was Savage Crew. But Savage Crew. Sort of had to like, because I guess you could certainly wear down your grinder blade, but it depended on the levels, right? So Laren was running around trying to find the ones that were like at least 75% full to try to scrape that together. It's a good question, though, as to like what would happen. I guess my assumption is if you run out of blades, like you can't use them at all anymore, you're done. And then I guess whichever team had made it further then.
If both teams had that?
I mean, if it happened to both teams, I would assume the one who made it the furthest. It's sort of like those challenges you have. I'm thinking of like stuff in Big Brother, right? Of like, okay, the first person to do this 100 times or the person who's farthest along after 5 minutes wins this challenge.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of my time back at the State University of New York at Oswego when there was a guy that I used to know my freshman year, and his name was the Scrapper. And he used to, at the bar, look for drinks that had been discarded.
Early. Even decades before COVID, that still is not okay.
Yeah, and then we'd say like, "Okay, this is a perfectly good drink that people have put down." He would call them half kills, was like the blades.
Is that the serial killer that we need on top of his tail?
And then I adapted that strategy to the laundry room when I found that there would be like many like discarded dryer sheets. That if you didn't have any, you could reuse them. You could use them more than once.
Oh, you're so environmentally conscious, Rob.
Yeah, that was. I kind of invented repurposing the shipping containers, I guess.
Oh, Rob Sesternino, the upcycler.
I guess it really started with the Scrapper repurposing the half discarded drinks at the bars.
Okay, first of all. There was a Scrapper in my husband's frat, but it was a pot-bellied pig.
Oh.
It was not a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, in the Tough as Nails Amazing Race Phil Kogan universe, that this all ties back together because the Scrapper was also a member of the rugby team. As we talked about with this past season of the Amazing Race, and I think was probably one of the people that did the land shark.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So I guess the Scrapper then would be more than happy to drink a glass of disgusting water that was brought to him.
It would have been no problem. No problem.
It would have been very... Did the Scrapper ever drink the bar mat?
I probably. I hope he's still alive. No idea.
I feel like the pandemic was not kind to guys like that.
Mm-hmm. No, they
had going out
it.
Like
just they had right, built up so much like a natural immunity over the years.
Good point,
like
good
COVID
point.
Was like nothing, did not faze them at
all.
Yeah,
he's like super immune to everything.
Yeah. So I'm sure he was a big masker as well. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, that you had to redo the blades, but I guess the big strategic thing that came up. So. Allie stepped up. Allie wanted to be the crew boss here and had a plan of that Allie originally wanted George on the grinding, correct? And then Sergio said he thought that actually George and Sanithia would be better for the measuring.
Yeah, so there were essentially two things to do, right? Because as you said, one shipping container was already measured out and essentially had to be grinded right there, right then. The other one had bupkis, and so you actually had to then measure out everything ahead of time. Both teams used the strategy of four grinders, you know, four Roblos and what's his name? Fred Savages, and two people measuring.
Fred Savage crew, Mike. It was right there.
The Fred Savage crew. Oh, if only. I would imagine, like, Phil, we've officially changed our name. We pulled the Washington Commanders. We are now the Fred Savage crew.
Yeah, they're gonna have like voiceover narration here to tell about what was all done.
What would you do if you ran out
Savage
of blades?
Crew. Yeah.
So Allie comes up with the strategy, as you said, that she wants George, she wants Sanithia and Sergio to do it initially. I imagine part of it still might be like Sergio's injury or perhaps the fact that, again, he has this experience in construction, is able to measure things out. But yeah, for whatever reason, Sergio says, no, George should be the one doing it. And Allie acquiesces here. And that ends up being the large mistake, because as Phil opines about, whether to their faces or not, when George takes over on the Grinders, he just like completely, he single-handedly allows Dirty Hands to catch up. The only reason why it's essentially neck and neck is because of what George does.
Yeah, I think that this was a task where I feel like that the measuring ultimately was not that important, because I feel like that where the team, we've seen teams get crossed up on measuring in the past where it's like, okay, they measure wrong and they have to do it all over again. But just, there was kind of like a fail safe, right? Like they had to measure and then a guy had to come in and give them like the thumbs up, like in terms of like making sure like their measurement was correct before they were even allowed to cut. Like, I think that they were like, hey, we don't have another shipping container if you screw this up.
Yeah, they really seemed conscious of, we can't have you ruin this shipping container.
Yeah.
Like you can destroy all the blades you want, but really you're going to make that cut correctly. And I was thinking there are still ways you could screw that up. Like there are still ways to ruin the shipping container. Mm-hmm. Like you got that grinder and you don't follow the line. And like all of a sudden you just kind of veer off onto one side. You could still do some damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were points where the panels were sort of like almost like an eighth of the way on. And I'm like, that's not as clean of a cut as probably these people want it to be. Maybe they sort of did some work after the fact, sanded it down to be like, yeah, we can't send this off to be a school.
These were the ones that they were going to have on clearance, is the value higher because that they were as seen on Tough as Nails?
Well, this is the floor model, basically.
Exactly. It's spinning around. This could be yours. Go to your local shipping container dealer.
Yeah. This is like, the one.
Could you cut it like 90% and then kick the panel out?
I think it would be very dangerous. I think that was probably the issue. I think they're very concerned about like this like sheet metal with very jagged edges, potentially like taking somebody out.
Well, I'm not saying, is it a good idea? I'm saying, could you?
I guess if you had a strong enough kicker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had last season they had a guy that almost went to the NFL. So
that's true.
Maybe. So, and there was also a part of this task where you had to operate the crane also to move these panels out, which it seemed like that the teams had some issues with the crane as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always intrigued in these challenges as to like, what are the teams allowed to do and what are they not? Last challenge, for instance, they had to have a guy running that big, you know, pulley that was able to bring the net down. Here, they were able to operate the crane themselves. They're able to like move the apparatus around with the harness during the individual challenges. I mean, these are all people who have a fair set of skills. Going all the way back to them having to drive a forklift in the penultimate challenge, most of the time something that you require a license for. It's always interesting to see how much license they take with allowing them to operate this heavy machinery.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, and this, I feel like this might've been something we talked to Phil about at one point, but do they have to get any kind of special licensing if they're going to be operating this heavy machinery? Because I'm thinking specifically, there was a Penn and Teller bit that they did in New York where they had forklifts and they were driving forklifts and they both had to get licensed on how to operate the heavy machinery before they were allowed to do the trick on stage. So I wonder if there's like Tough as Nails pre-training where you have to get all the certification before you can do the challenges.
Yeah.
And if it is similar to when you turn your passport in for the Amazing Race and they stamp it with a bunch of visas for places that you're not going to go.
Oh, fake licenses. All right. You better learn how to jet ski.
I suspect that doesn't happen on Tough as Nails, because I feel like that, especially like with all like the COVID protocol, like it feels like that would be like untenable to like make this all work with the timing of what they're doing. But would be interesting to know.
Yeah, and maybe it could also be like you just have people on your team that have that certification. If you've got a plurality of people that already know how to do that, you just make those people do that thing.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I wonder is if anyone injures themselves and they are taking any sort of medication, some of which says do not operate heavy machinery. Mm. Is that something that might unfortunately exclude them from getting to do certain things or sort of pigeonhole them into saying, OK, well, you can't operate this crane, so we have to put you on, you know, grinding out the sheet metal.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure at the point where you're taking medication that inhibits your ability to operate machinery, I think that's the point at which they you are no longer allowed to compete on the program.
You get freight trained. Yeah.
Yeah. You get freight trained.
Yeah. Shout out to freight train. Anybody else that we want to highlight from the team portion of the challenge? I feel like that Renee got a little bit of a spotlight of Renee is the glue.
Renee is such an interesting part of this season because she was a big pop of color, quite literally, in the first couple episodes. Yeah, and then she was eliminated, and I kind of feel like she's changed from pink to purple. I feel like we've seen very little of her. I don't think she had like a talking head at all in this episode. But to your point, Laura did have this sort of highlight of a minute, right, where she's like, Renee's everywhere, everyone needs her. So it's good that she's still, you know, utilizing these challenges. It's just odd. I feel like we haven't heard from her in a while.
Yeah, well, she's also, they've also been wearing like team colors more often. And we don't really see a lot of that pink. So she's visually, she's harder to pinpoint.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else that had a memorable time in the team part of the competition this week?
I mean, you got to give it up to Mr. And now we can eventually call him like Mr. Manager, right? Mr. Crew Boss, because mm-hmm. he took that title on and he brought a lot of success to it. So we'll see. We've been talking this season, right, about how it's been less about everybody gets a turn and more so of, okay, who would be best for this? Considering their success, I would not be surprised if the next episode they're like, all right, Mr., you just gave us a victory, so we're going to put you on again as crew boss.
Well, Mr. had the editing spotlight where that he said that the using the grinder the right way was like butter. And then he had the classical music editing sequence here for this week of Tough as Nails.
It's very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I butter. Still have trouble every time somebody calls him Mr. I'm like, well, what did he do wrong? Is he in trouble?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help that my son's babysitter now like calls my son Mr. all the time.
Boy, between George and Mr. on this show,
I know. Jess. It's like my poor kid. No wonder he's not watching this season.
Mm-hmm. He would hear his name all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything from the else from the team challenge this week?
We talked about it a bit, but I thought I want to underline again the moment where Allie has the idea to put George on the grinder and she gets shot down. I think we learned something valuable about being the crew boss in that moment. And I think Allie's story this season has definitely been about kind of learning how to get out of her comfort zone and speak up for herself. And at this moment, we see that her not exercising those lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say between what happened to Allie this episode and what ultimately happens to Beth, I do think like trust your gut is a good mm-hmm. theme. And it's understandable why you have, you know, the ability to doubt yourself. Allie is hearing from Sergio, somebody who is more than twice her age and probably has more than twice her amount of experience in his line of work, being like, it should be this thing. You be inclined, much like we want to do in this world, to listen to the experts. But sometimes, you know, you're successful for a reason. You get to your point in a career for a reason. And you should say, no, this is a decision that I want to make and I'm sticking with it. And there's value in that as well. And it turns out that, yeah, she was right and Sergio was wrong. So I don't know if Allie will be given the chance to be crew boss again. We only have a few team challenges left. But it was certainly, I think, a bit of like, a knock down for her, but also a knock up at the same time. And that she's like, okay, we lost the challenge, but I was technically right, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Technically correct. Best kind of correct.
Okay. So that's Tough as Nails episode number 6. Next week, it looks like that we are going to work on hanging ceilings.
Yeah, we're going to get schooled. It looked like we were in some sort of like school gymnasium, I believe, mm-hmm. is what they were doing. That's what I imagined from Phil's context clues, where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a cameo from a past Tough as Nails contestant, which is exciting as well.
Mm-hmm.
The return of Hanger.
They're going to be hanging some stuff as mm-hmm. well, which is exciting. Hanger was you know, definitely the Roofer Lee, right? Like the oldest guy in the season, big personality, but got eliminated super early. So I'm sure he's going to provide like a lot of quality, you know, commentary. Phil's going to be very happy to see him. I think to have someone to bat against when it came to these challenges.
Jess, do you have any updates in terms of who you're feeling is the winner of the season?
I mean, I don't have a clear picture. I think George is still getting a very good edit. Mm-hmm. I think he had a rough week this week, but he's still like overall doing really well. I think I could see a case for Jake or Alima, mm-hmm. because they've both been historically strong competitors, and they had a really great, showing this week. I don't know. Almost anybody left in the competition could secure a win. We're not seeing like a very clear front runner at this point. Mm-hmm.
There's no Danny and Murph out there.
No. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I love Danny and Murph, but I kind of like it better this way when I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mike, anything else for you this week for Tough as Nails?
Something that's a little tangential that I do want to point out is we have all kind of been sitting on our hands waiting for any amazing race news. This is yes. Phil Kogan adjacent, yes. right? CBS did do a winter press day on Tuesday, you know, which led to corresponding with the Survivor 44 cast release. And as far as I can tell, there was no announcement about the Amazing Race 35 coming in the spring. So my guess would be either summer or fall. So savor it up, people. Drink it down, because this is probably the last Phil Kogan we'll get for a few months.
I don't know. If I had to guess, I wonder if it could be also post-Survivor, pre-Big Brother. I think that there's also like the possibility of...
Yeah, there's like a month and a half period there where they could squeeze everything in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so it would be the fill-in show?
The fill-in show, yeah. So I could definitely see like a, you know, June, you know, second premiere of, you know, The Amazing Race leading into... Yeah. Into Big Brother with maybe like a challenge, CBS coming after that.
And they could even do, I think they did that with like Amazing Race 31, right? Like it aired in like from like April to June. They could still air it while Big Brother is airing.
I think what happened there was, I think that there was some other show that was on, and they ended up, was that the show? What was the show that LeBron produced? The Million Dollar Mile. And they canceled that and moved The Amazing Race up, I feel like, to take that spot. So, you know, keep an eye out on these CBS scheduling things, because, you know, as we have seen many a times in the past, it is subject to change.
I think right now the Wednesday night slot, which people assume to be taken up on, like, you know, premiering post Survivor, is Survivor. I think it's Lingo, and then it's the True Lies show. So we'll see what happens with those latter two.
What's the True Lies show based on, like, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis film?
Yeah, they're doing a TV show about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. That, you know, people, it's a hot IP, so makes sense. Okay.
It's as hot as that heat gun that they were using.
For sure. Okay. Jess, what's coming up for you?
Not a lot coming up for me. I'm devoting all of my spare time right now to Tough as Nails, although coming up very, very soon, one other person on this podcast and I will be getting together to talk about, yeah, I don't know who that could be, but we're going to be talking about Star Trek Picard, which is almost upon us, and it is the
when
final
season.
When does
that
season. Start? When does that start?
February 16th.
Oh,
2 weeks.
Oh my God. I had no idea.
It snuck up on us.
Really?
Rob, if you're interested,
I'll definitely be following it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically, we're getting back pretty much the entire cast of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. So it will be, yeah. I don't know if it'll be
the
more
original
of a
Savage crew.
Yeah. The original Savage crew. I don't know if it'll be more of a finale to the Picard story we've already gotten, or if it'll just be like a, you know, season 8 of Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, excited for that. Mike?
Yeah.
This is a big week for you?
It's been a very big week, because as I mentioned before, January 31st, we ended the first month of 2023 with a bang. The Survivor 44 cast was released. 18 new players right now at parade.com. I posted all their photos and bios. I'm working my way through the preseason interviews that I got to do in written form, posting 2 a day there. There are already a few up over at parade.com. And then on the podcast side of things, Rob, you were away, unfortunately, but we had a fantastic substitute in the form of a Survivor winner herself. Marianne Oketch came on. She and I came on a few hours after the cast released to give our immediate reactions to what we know about the season so far. We talked about the cast. We even got the opportunity to watch a little bit of a preview of the premiere that ended up coming out on the day the cast was released. But you and I are really going to get our hands dirty when it comes to talking about this cast, as starting at the end of this week, we're going to be doing our usual tribe previews, each podcast talking one tribe at a time, listening to these preseason interviews, going off of their bio, some other information we might know, and trying to figure out, piece together the puzzle, perhaps, without looking at the picture proper on the box.
Mike, so, the end of this week, that's too long to wait. Let's do it today.
Okay, we'll do it now. F it, we'll do it now. So we'll be doing it today, then. We'll be coming out with the Tika tribe, which is, I'd say, as chaotic, perhaps, as Savage Crew when it comes to personalities. We'll talk a bit more about that, but really excited to get into the Survivor season. Actually, speaking of a different type of Survivor, Australian Survivor, I get to fill in with Shannon Gus on occasion to do exit press. I got to talk with the first boot of Australian Survivor, which was an absolute hoot without giving away who the boot was. Had a very fun time talking with them. And then over on the post-show recap side of things, you've all been hearing about it, how this past episode of The Last of Us was a sensational piece of television. I thought no differently. It was probably my favorite episode of television I've seen in at least a year. And so myself and Grace spent a long, long time, but hopefully not too long, talking long, long time, the third episode of The Last of Us, talking Vox Machina as well, Heroes, other random odds and ends in between. But yeah, it's been a big week for CBS reality TV, and I'm really excited to talk more about it in the weeks to come.
Okay, be on the lookout for all of the Survivor previews coming your way. On Wednesday night, I also talked with Jenny Autumn about the latest episode of Special Forces, World's Toughest Test, as a couple more celebrities ended up walking from the competition. We broke that all down and much more on our latest recap of that, plus everything else going on over on robhasawebsite.com. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.